Stars, El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. Good evening and welcome to our program. Vernon Dozier, a high school football coach from Belmar Academy, is going to be talking with us in this first hour about Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints. Why? Because today, tape was released of Greg Williams in the locker room prior to the New Orleans-San Francisco 49er playoff game, in which he was heard to tell his players, and this is why the Saints were fined. Greg Williams is no longer coaching with the team. I believe he's been he's moved on to actually a better job. I think he's gotten a head coaching job someplace. But keep in mind, the Saints lost the game to the 49ers. But he's heard saying in the locker room to make Frank Gore run sideways, beat on his head, basically, lay out Alex Smith, go right after the ACL, which is a tendon that is injured with athletes, of one of the players, I forget who, one of the wide receivers, go after Vernon Davis, injure people, hit them when they're out of bounds, and just basically telling the players to physically, you know, this is why the Saints were singled out by the National Football League, this bounty mentality. And by bounty, quite literally, players are awarded money based upon who it is they're able to knock out of the football game. So it's you know, it seems to go above and beyond certainly the rules and the spirit of sportsmanship, even though it is a professional game. And of course, that in and of itself is a whole different thing. Vernon Dozier is joining us. He's a football coach, long-standing football coach. At Belmar Academy, and you've won a lot of games, Vernon, and you coached at the college level. Tell me what you think of this tape. Did you hear it?
Yeah, Phil, I did hear it. I've heard, to be honest with you, I've heard similar things in locker rooms down through the years when I coached at college ball. It's not an unusual thing to hear. I think that to hear it broadcast on the radio, as I did.
By the way, folks, we're going to have the tape and we're going to play you excerpts of it. As you might well imagine, it's a little.
There's some four-letter words, I think.
Yeah, it's got some language, so we're cleaning that up a little bit. But I interrupted you, Vernon. You're talking about having heard this kind of thing.
Well, you hear coaches say things. Try to encourage their players to, you know, really, as we say in the business, stick someone, you know, and that's to lay people out. I mean, football's a contact game. There's no question it's a contact game.
What did you think when you hear? What do you think when you hear a coach talking like that?
Well, you might be talking to the wrong guy. I don't personally, at the professional level, I don't personally disapprove. I don't want anyone to think that I believe that harming or injuring another human being is the way to win in a sporting contest. But you're playing for thousands and thousands, if not millions of dollars. And I'll give you an example, Phil. I played minor league baseball, as you know, for a very brief time. And I played catcher. I know that my job is a professional job. My job is to play as well as I can to keep the other team from winning the game. And as a catcher, I fielded a bunt during a particular play where the runner was running down the line to first base.
Right.
The only way that I was going to get that ball to the first baseman was to throw that ball on a line, and it just so happened that runner's head was right in the way. Now, what I'm saying is this. If I throw the ball around him, the first baseman doesn't have that much of a chance to catch it. So I took the ball, and Coach asked me later, what was I doing? I said, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I said, he's in my way. And I threw that ball, and I hit him right in the head. Now, he was with that the throw. I mean, he's awarded the base.
Right.
But I can tell you, I put him out of the game. Now,
all right, so you took the ball and you threw it right at his head.
Yes, if I tried to throw in any other way, I'm trying to hit the first baseman and the guy's in the way. That's how you play the pro game. That's how you play the pro game. My whole career as a baseball player didn't go very far. I was only a minor league player, but I'll tell you, I played for keeps. I played for keeps. I don't know about anybody else. But that's what I do. When that guy was in the way, I took that baseball in my right hand, and I threw it as hard as I could. I tried to throw it through his head. I mean, that's generally what you're trying to do. Now, did I know I was going to hurt him? There's a very good chance he was going to get hurt, but then again, he's running down the first base line. I'm the catcher. I have fielded this thing.
Well, not to judge your play, I've seen some catchers take the ball on a bunt like that.
Now, don't start telling me what other catchers would do, okay?
Well, for the purpose of my audience, I'd like to just describe, they'll take the ball, they'll take a step to the left to try to get an angle on a throw.
If you're a right-hander and you take a step to the left, you still got this guy in your way. See, what you're doing is you're trying to... You're trying to give the runner. Basically, what you want to do is give the runner the base. I'm not trying to.
No, I'm not trying to give the runner the base. I'm trying to get you to throw the guy out without hitting him. You know, he was awarded the base.
He was awarded the base, but he was knocked out of the game. You understand what I'm saying?
So, all right. Well, what's more valuable at that particular time? What if there was a run to score on from third?
Then I wouldn't be throwing a first. Wow. I wouldn't be throwing it first.
All right, okay, that's a good point. All right, I'm talking here with Vernon. I don't want to talk about baseball. We're talking about football.
Well, that's what I want to talk about, but I'm just trying to tell you that... Let me say this, Phil.
Let me give our phone number out. It's 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Vernon Dozier, we're talking about Greg Williams, the fired defensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints, the tape of his, one of the tapes of him telling his players to injure people from just before the San Francisco 49er game was released today, and we listened to a little bit of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear a lot of it, but I want to say this. I'm a high school football coach, and I like working with the kids. That having been said, I can tell you that it's frustrating for me because there are times when I want to tell my players, I want to tell them how it's done, you know. I want to tell them how it's done. I want to give them the facts of life.
Well, in terms of what Mr. Williams was saying.
Look, let me just tell you this. I can't do it because they're high school players, and I would have the parents, I would have the school. There'd be no end to what I'd have to deal with. But there are times when I got to bite my tongue in the locker room. There are times when I'm standing there and I'm looking at them, and I want to tell them, you go out there, and I want you to take someone's knee out. If we're down to it, and there's no other choice... go for a knee.
And that means that some kid is going to have a serious injury that could end his career.
Well, see, this is what I'm saying. I don't bring it up because I get parents like you who get overly dramatic.
You don't think that's overly dramatic? You think that's overly dramatic when I say that you hit a kid's knee and that could end not only his football career in high school, but he won't be able to play for the rest of his life.
Yes, that is overly dramatic. That is over. That's the first thing that people will tell you when they don't want you to play football 300%. It's what I call a 300%, and it's what we call it at Belmar. It's called a Coach Dozier's 300%. Now, as I leave campus every day, Phil, I look off to my left, and I see a sign that was erected 2 years ago. It says Dozier Stadium. Okay?
It's named after you.
That's exactly what it's named after. It's named after me because I've won 3 division titles. And I've won 10 league championships. And we've sent probably a dozen players on to major college programs. And of those, we've probably sent a dozen players over the last 6 or 7 years on to the professional football. That's the kind of coach I am.
But, Coach, you're saying...
Hold on now. And to be that kind of a coach... you got to be willing to look them in the eye and tell them, I want you to go out there, and if it means that you've got to knock someone unconscious, but I can't do it. I've got to bite my tongue.
Why do you coach at the high school level?
I coach at the high school level I started out doing it as a favor for Father Jim, who had started as the principal here, and I just got hooked into it. I enjoyed it. I was coaching college.
But why did you not coach at the professional level?
I decided that I don't personally think professional football is ready for a lot of the things that I want to do.
Okay.
There's a lot of things I want to do. There's a lot of innovations that I've thought about over the years, and things that, quite frankly, would be revolutionary. And I just don't think college professional football right now is at a level that I personally would find acceptable to me. So I'm able to do my thing at the high school level. I can shape young minds. I can get them to. We've got a high school player. He'll do anything you tell him to do, and you can get them just about to do anything. But I don't want to counsel them to
play the style of football that Greg Williams plays.
I wish I could, Phil.
You really think that high school football players, this is a way for them to play?
I'm telling you, it's the real world. It's the real world, and I think what happened to Coach Williams was a damn shame because he's a great coach. I think his players, if you want to be honest, his players got scared. They didn't do what he asked them to do. They got, if you want to use the word sissy, whatever.
Well, what happened was is he got fined, and the football team got in trouble, and he got in trouble, and he's gone.
Well, I know what the commissioner of football says, but, you know.
Well, and those are the rules of the game, you know.
They may be the rules of the game, Phil, but it's not football. Okay, that's what I coach. I don't know about anybody else.
All right, we're talking here with Vernon Dozier. So you think that kind of ruthless, those kinds of ruthless tactics?
I think they are needed. When the money is on the line and the chips are down, they're absolutely needed, yeah.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, the number here with Coach Vernon Dozier on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're talking about the Coach Greg Williams of the New Orleans Saints and the tape that has been made public of him telling his players to go after knees, knock people unconscious, go after ACL, go after injuries, really bang on people. And obviously he was fine. The team was fine. He lost his job. 877-876-7445 is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show, here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. And we've got some of this audio, Vernon, if you want to hear it. As you've said, you've heard the stuff before, right?
I've heard these tapes before, yeah. And
now, before we listen to this, I wanted to get back to just the one comment you made. You don't like to see players get injured, I take it.
No, nobody likes to see a player get injured. But, Phil, here's the thing. When you're playing football and you're playing for all the marbles, then you have to counsel your players to do the very best they can. And to do the very best they can, unfortunately, means they're going to have to hit someone, and they're going to have to hit someone and make it stick, make it hurt. Now, the biggest problem I've got is I can't tell my players that because they're going to sort of betray the locker room. They're going to run off and tell their mom or their dad or, you know,
wouldn't you expect them to do that?
Yes, I would expect them to have communication with their parents, but what's in the locker room of a football team, that is a very sacred trust.
So in other words, what you tell the players, they can't tell their parents.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying when I tell the players certain things, I think they have to be very careful in how they explain it to their parents, because I get these parents coming up to me, talking to me, did you this, that, and I have to, as I've often said to you, I've got to be very careful with what I say, because most of the time you just want to tell them to get away from you. They don't know what they're talking about. I like the parents, but some of them think that they're, you know, they should be coach, and of course, no, they shouldn't. And it all adds up to a very, very difficult day. So it's a hard one. But I would love to be able to tell the players.
So you want to counsel them to go ahead and stick people. That's what you're basically saying. Because
I would like them to know that that's their option. Yeah, but I can't do that.
Let me play this as, I forget who this is. Well, yeah, I know who it is. It's Greg Williams, but I don't know which cut this is. Here is Greg Williams in the locker room talking to his players. This is before the San Francisco 49er playoff game.
We're going to dominate the line of scrimmage, and we're going to kill the kid. Every single one of you, before you get off the pile, affect the head. Early, affect the head.
Affect the head.
Continue. touch and hit the head. They're going to come in. They're going to be shocked with our contact.
So that's him saying to hit someone in the head.
That's absolutely correct, because that's where the decision, that's where the human body, obviously, is making its decisions and making its calculations. And so you want to hit that man in the head.
And you want to hit him in the head to the point where he's got a concussion.
Well, I didn't hear him say that. Just saying, you know, hit the head.
At the high school level, too?
At the high school level, you would advise them to do that, too. But, see, I can't talk about it here because there's a lot of, as I said, nosy parents who don't understand, Phil. It isn't that they don't want the best. They just don't get it.
All right, here, let me play one more here. This is, this is him talking about Frank Gore, the running back for the 49ers, telling them to go after Gore's head.
We've got everything in the world to make sure we kill Frank Gore's head.
Yeah.
We want him running sideways.
See that?
We
want
his head sideways.
Yes. Yeah, right there.
32.
Hold on.
The one not to him. He has no idea what he's in for. When he's on the sideline, we got to turn that over, turn the coaches over, turn the spectators over, go get that from the sideline.
Who's 32?
I don't know. It could be Frank Gore, but did you hear that? That is a coach telling his defensive players what it's all about. And if you wouldn't mind, if you could play it again, Phil, because I want to give people a sense of what's going on there. You're hearing the coach there.
We've got everything in the world to make sure we kill Frank Gore's head.
Right there, you left, yeah.
We want him running sideways.
Yeah.
We want his head
there.
Sideways.
There you go, there you go.
Little 32?
Yeah.
The one not to
That's right. That's
he
right.
He has no idea what he's in for.
That's right. Yeah.
He's
right.
On the sideline.
Yeah.
We got to turn that over.
Yeah.
Turn the coaches over.
That's right.
Turn the spectators over.
All right, but it sounds like you're enjoying.
Hold on. You're talking in the middle of it.
And it sounds like you're enjoying it.
Of course, you're not enjoying it. You're listening to a coach. And by the way, whoever put those beeps in there, my ears are starting to bleed. You know, but whoever, I got to tell you, you enjoy listening to a coach do his thing. Know what he's doing, giving his players the game plan, telling his players what's up, and going for it. And that's what you hear there. That's what you hear from that coach. So when I say that I wish I could coach my high school players like that, I do, but I can't.
But you said that you are at the high school level and not at the pro level because the pros just, it's not a good game for you because you've got a lot of revolutionary ideas. See, the reason why I'm bringing this up is, first of all, even at the pro level, they don't like that kind of coaching.
No, I know they don't like that kind of coaching, and I don't think that, I'm not even saying they shouldn't have fined him. I'm just saying that as an old-fashioned coach, you know, you just, you like to hear it. I don't think there's a football coach out there that would disagree with me when he says, when I hear a coach coaching like that, boy, I love it. I love to hear a coach tell you what you got to do. Go after him. If you got to take his head off, you got to take his head off. If you got to take his knee out, you got to take a knee out. If you got to lay him out so he never gets up again, I'm being extreme.
So he never gets up again.
No, I'm being extreme, but that's what you got to do. You got to get them in the mindset. And I'd love to talk to my players because I got these high school kids, and some of them, you know, it's. I have to be honest with you, Phil. They come to the football stadium fresh from their mother's, you know, hot breakfast or whatever. And I'm not complaining about the parents, but boy, they soften these kids up, man. And by the time they get over to me, they have gone from being, you know, a young man that you can talk to. They get to their parents, and the parents just soften them up. And by the time they get over to our football field, there's not a whole hell of a lot left of them. You know,
well, what does that mean? You mean they're mama's boys or they're...
Well, they're not mama's boys, but they just... You got to beat on them and just get them out there and make them bleed a little bit. And it's getting tougher and tougher. With every passing year, the kids that come into our program at Belmar Academy football program, they're wimpier, smaller, softer, more scared, more dumb.
All right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier here. And we're talking about the Greg Williams tape advising his players before the 49er game to start beating on people. We'll be right back with more. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Phil, world famous Phil Hendry show here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy as we're talking about Greg Williams, who was the defensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints and eventually got booted from the team. The team was fined because he was paying bounties.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think of the idea of paying bounties?
Well, again, that's a professional game, you know, and that's what you got to do. Now, I will tell you that...
Yeah, but it's in violation of the rules of the league.
I understand it's in violation of the rules of the league. I get all of that. I understand all of that, okay? But I don't think anybody at the league level understands how this game is played. I don't think anybody at the league level understands that when you get out on the field and you have a job to do, even at the high school level, you got a job to do.
And what job does a high school player have to do?
What job does a high school player have to do? He's got to get out there and win that game because that's what we're there for. That's our job. That's what he's getting. He's not getting paid, but that is what he's going to do. He's going to get out and win that. He's got to do what he has to do. It's not professional. You're right, and I do sometimes wish I was a professional coach. If for no other reason than I wouldn't have to listen to these parents and all these people second guess. I'm just saying, this is the game. And the league, I don't know who infiltrated the league to turn the league office into this place where they've got this touchy-feely attitude about life, you know, where it's probably more touchy-feely over there at the NFL head office that actually men, real men, sitting down and getting something done for the day. I don't care. Even if it's just ordering lunch, I'd like to see three men show up at the NFL office on any given day and do a man's work as opposed to sitting around and holding hands and figuring out how they can appease a couple more touchy-feely, you know.
We are talking about people getting injured here, Coach. We are talking about...
I understand that, Phil.
No, but you know, and so it isn't just so much a man's work as it's... We're talking... You know, look at this bounty thing. How many times have we seen a man rolled off a field on a stretcher or in a wheelchair as the result of some of these hits? That's all I'm saying. 877-876-7445, The Phil Hendry Show. And here is Tomiko. Hello, Tomiko. You're on The Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I want to ask a question. Do you have any kids, Mr. Dozier?
Do I have kids? I have no kids. No, I do not at this time have kids. No, ma'am. I've been married twice. My first wife was unable.
Okay, the reason why I ask because I'm a nursing student, and I see a lot of kids coming through the ER after partaking in some kind of contact sport, and they come in with all kinds of traumas from, you know, playing football or whatever, and it's really sad to tell a parent that their child may not walk again because of a coach told them to get out on the field and be aggressive, force another player.
Well, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, I like talking to you, Tamika. I'm sorry that Mr. Henry took your call on the air, though, because you and I should talk off the air before you are on the air scaring people, because that's what you're doing. You're scaring.
Well,
Why can't she give that information?
Well, I think her just coming on and saying, "Hi, I'm a nurse, and let me tell you what I've seen," and scaring people half to death with stories out of the ER. I mean, good Lord, you know.
No, she's saying what she saw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see this to make it. I don't think she was graphic.
Well, did you say something about how they get their heads bashed in or something? I don't know, but what I'm saying. Yes, ma'am. I don't know.
I want to hear what she has to say because she's speaking from the standpoint of a nurse.
Well, actually, I'm a nursing student now.
Yes, ma'am.
A lot of the
you've seen this. Yeah.
With these
yeah.
traumas from head injuries, and also is football that important? Where you want to hurt somebody? Where they possibly could lose their life? Is it that serious? Football.
Well, to make I would say this to you, ma'am. You know, when you get out on the field and it's either you or him standing between you and a big, maybe the biggest payday of your life. Maybe that money means that you are going to finally pull yourself up out of a sewer you've been living in your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do, okay, I'll say it, all you have to do is cripple that man across from you.
Cripple him?
I don't think that I want that money that bad.
Can I tell you what Deacon Jones, here's something to me. Deacon Jones said this. Deacon Jones is one of the greatest defensive players in the history of pro football. He came up at a time when black players were just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And Deacon Jones said something that I always remembered. He said, right across the line from me was a white man. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in my life, I could show that man what kind of a man I was. And I did everything in my power to rip his head off, tear his throat out.
Well, okay. I mean, you're bringing up a racial thing here.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing.
Well, yeah, but now we're living in the year 2011 or 2012.
2012. You must have taken a hit off the head. Don't
2012. And we're talking about young people. That's what the lady is saying here. Forget about Deacon Jones and all of these, the pros.
I'm telling you, there's a job to do. I understand the lady. And I don't tell my kids anything, but I just wish once I could stand there in a locker room and say to those kids, go out there, and if you have to gouge someone's, well.
God! All right,
Tamika,
thank you very much for your call, and I hope that the good work you guys do in the emergency room doesn't get lost on a lot of these people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
877-876-PHIL is the number.
What do you mean lost on these people? You didn't want me to be racial.
I'm not being racial. I said lost on football players and football coaches. I don't understand you bringing up Deacon Jones.
I'm bringing up Deacon Jones because there's a lot of people that want to say to me, gee, Coach, you're being a bad guy saying this stuff. Well, what if I told you that Deacon Jones thought that way because for the first time in his life, he's looking across the line at a white man, and he could do anything he wanted to him. You see, there was a time, Phil, when a black man looking at a white man and thinking violent thoughts, that could get his ass thrown in jail or worse. But now, professional football allowed that man to look across that defensive line, stare right into that guy's eyes, and say, you know what I think I'm going to do today? Just for relaxation, just, you know, maybe for a change of pace, I think I'll reach up under the helmet and rip that guy's throat out. And
oh, come on, man. Who thinks that? Why would you take it there?
I'm telling you it's true. Tell me I'm not telling you the truth.
I don't know. I don't know what a player is going to say or to himself or to anybody else. I understand that there are certain violent thoughts that are going to be used as motivational, as some kind of a motivation by players, regardless of the times, regardless of whether the man is living in a time of racial discrimination, whether he's living today. But we're talking about here a coach who is sanctioning violence with money.
Okay, let's talk about that.
All right, and we're talking about a coach sanctioning violence with money and saying, you guys go out there and I'll give you $500, $1,000, $2,000, what have you, if you go out and you cripple a guy or you knock him out of the game or you give him a concussion or you go after a guy's injury, as you heard this guy, Williams, saying, talked about Vernon Davis, go after Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis had an injury, go after that guy. Go after Alex Smith, you know, we banged him up in the preseason game. He's scared. Go after him. You know.
All right, let's talk about that. You want to talk about it? I'd love to talk about that. What if I'm a coach and I'm standing there among my players and I say to those guys, hey, listen, let me tell you guys something. There's some guys on the other team, and they've made comments about your girlfriends and your mothers.
And you're lying.
All right, let's say I'm lying. Now, I don't have to say go out there and rip a man's throat out.
Yeah, but you know what the effect of that is going to be is exactly the same thing.
All I'm telling you is that these guys on the other side of the football field made comments about your mothers and your daughters and your sisters and what they'd like to do with them. Now, I haven't told them to do anything.
Well, Coach, come on.
No, hold on. I haven't told them to do anything. All I said was, by the way, the quarterback over there, and maybe I'll point to a defensive lineman named Smith. You, Smith, that quarterback, he said he got one look at your mama, and he had some dirty thoughts. Now,
well, have you ever done that with high school players?
I can't comment on that.
So you have. So you haven't counseled them to be violent?
I haven't counseled them to be violent, no.
You've just said things that the other guy said.
I can't comment on that. I can't comment on that. But I will tell you this. As I said, every time I leave and I look across the field and I see Dozier Stadium, I will think about some of those things, like that sign up there that says Dozier Stadium. Why? Because I told my players that the opposition wanted to do things with their sisters.
And that's why you...
Yeah, that's why I have that sign sometimes.
Unbelievable. All right, we'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. With Coach Vernon Dozier here. We'll play those clips one more time from Coach Greg Williams.
You think I'm kidding, don't you?
No, I don't think you're kidding. No, I don't. I'm a little bit stunned, that's all.
I am not counseling violence, Phil.
Well, again, I think when you say to somebody, those guys over there want to do stuff with your sisters. We'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-7445.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And we're wrapping up here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy, a football coach, high school football coach, though, but still a football coach, talking about Greg Williams, the former defensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints, who was, as you know, fined and eventually fired by the team for comments that he made advising his players, basically instructing his players to injure San Francisco 49ers prior to a playoff game. And we're going to listen to some of these comments one more time, Vernon.
I'd like people to pay attention to Coach Williams. I know what your feelings are, Phil, and I respect that. But I want people to pay attention to Coach Williams because he's talking right here. Which cut are you going to play?
I'm going to play, well, I've basically got two. One mentions Gore, and the other I think is just a general.
Okay, yeah, in the first cut here, you're just going to listen to him lay out the facts of life. And again, you know, it's tough for me to say I don't like this. As a coach, I got to tell you, I love it. I love it, but I can't say that I love it. I would love to advise my players on the high school level, but I can't because then I'm going to get, you know, I'll tell you what happens, Phil, is you get a lot of them want to talk to their mama, you know. And
well, I mean, but they're high school players.
I know they're high school players, but my job, one of my jobs is to tell them, okay, now you're young men. I know that you're still living at home, and I know that your mommy, you know, she's going to come with a pack of lunch, or she's got you know how a lot of the kids will bring in a Tupperware, and they got this one kid brought in, I don't know what it was, applesauce cake. You know what that is?
I don't know, no, why?
What do you mean, why?
I don't know, Vernon, is that important?
Yes, because what I'm saying to you is these kids come in with what mama, you know. And
okay, so you're saying they're mama's boys.
No, they're not mama's boys so much as they're just used to having something from... There is an umbilical still reaching out. So when they come into my locker room and they still got applesauce cake, that has to be, and I say this with the greatest respect, but I've got to destroy that. I've got to destroy it. I've got to take a flamethrower to it. Otherwise, they're never going to be men. They're always going to be guys, you know, in life. They're going to walk everywhere with a bag from mama, you know. And
you say the name or the word mama in a very mocking way, though, don't you?
I don't. Well, no, but...
You do. You say mama. I mean, aren't these guys, they are young men. They're under 18. They're still developing.
Well, they're still developing, but they want to be taken seriously. These guys come into the locker room. They want you to take them serious.
Yeah. Well, they may want a lot of things. There's a lot of things that kids want, and some of them they get and some of them they don't. And
well, okay, Phil, but have you ever been a coach?
No, but I've been a parent. What I'm trying to say to you, I'm not trying to tell you how to coach, you know.
I'm just telling you, I had a kid come into my locker room the other day, and he gets out his Tupperware, and I said, what is that? Because I didn't know what it was. I looked inside. I picked it up. I tried to figure out what it was. He said, well, Coach, why don't you open it up? And I said, okay, smartass, you know. And
why is that smartass?
Well, I mean, it was trying to make me sound like I'm an idiot because I can't tell what he's bringing in for lunch from his mama, you know. And
there you go again.
With what?
The way you say mama, mama.
Well, Phil, I think you're a little hypersensitive, but what I'm trying to tell you is this.
I don't think so.
What I'm trying to tell you is this. I opened it up, and I looked at it. I said, I still don't know what this is. The kid's name is Sherman. I said, I don't know what this is, Sherman. He said, it's applesauce cake. And I said, I took the Lord's name in vain, and I shouldn't have, and I said, G-D, you know, I said, you know, when's it going to end? And I walked away.
All right, well, let me listen to...
To you, you blow it off, but to me, it's significant.
Let's listen to this tape here. This is Greg Williams from the New Orleans Saints.
We're going to dominate the line of scrimmage, and we're going to kill the kid. Every single one of you, before you get off the pile, affect the head. Early, affect the head. Continue, touch and hit the head. They're going to come in. They're going to be shocked with our contact.
Okay, so there he is talking about affecting the head, touch the head.
Exactly, exactly. That's what you have to do. That's where, as I said to you earlier, Phil, that's where the decisions are made. And if we had more of that mentality in football, I wouldn't have guys coming in with applesauce cake. That's all I'm trying to tell you. You know, I know it sounds smart-ass, and I know that you don't quite get it. But
bringing in applesauce cake, I don't see how that... here is the second cut.
You don't see how a guy comes in and he's got...
Let me just go to cut number two.
All right, fine. But I can't believe a guy brings applesauce cake into my locker room.
He brings applesauce cake into your locker room and what?
And he brought it into my locker room.
All right, here is cut number two talking about Frank Gore and what they want to do to him.
We've got everything in the world to make sure we kill Frank Gore's head.
Yeah, I like
we
this.
We want him yep. running sideways.
Yeah.
We want his head
yeah.
sideways.
Yeah. Now, you hear that? Yeah, I love
he
it.
He has no idea what he's in for.
I love it.
When he's on the sideline, we got to turn that over, turn the coaches over, turn the spectators over, go get that on the sideline.
I love that, Phil. I'll tell you why I love that. I love it because it's the truth. That's what you got to do. And you're not going to win football games waiting around for man.
All right, Coach. Well, unfortunately, the reality is it's the system and whatever else you want to call it, the public opinion, the what parents want, it's all working against you. And
I know it's working against me. Tell me about it. I know that. There's not a football coach in America that doesn't know it's not working against him.
Well, but I'm saying that that the injuries that this can bring, even at the professional level, you know, we often talk about injuries among kids and among little leaguers and Pop Warner and high school players and so on. But this is the professional level saying this stuff's out of hand and we can't do it anymore.
I think that what's happened, Phil, is that we have left a period where, you know, we went out onto a football field. And
you've seen players taken off on gurneys. You've seen players taken off on stretchers. You've seen players in wheelchairs for the rest of their lives. You saw what happened to Daryl Stingley. How could you say that that is a part of the game?
It just is. It just is, Phil.
And you're willing to accept that?
Phil, there's only a very few. There's only a handful of us that can actually play and coach this game. It's a very special game. There's only a handful of us. I'm listening to you tonight, and I can pretty much tell you, you ain't one of them.
Okay, fine. I take that as a compliment.
Okay. Maybe you do. There's probably a whole lot of men out there that are just like you. They just ain't got it. That's why football is only played by a handful of people. Very special people. That's why you've only got, in the National Football League, maybe 3,000 players, tops. I understand what you're saying. I know it scares you. I know it makes you weak in the knees. I know you want to, you know, lose your mud or however you want to say it.
I just don't think it's a good way to conduct yourselves trying to injure somebody when the whole point is to win the game.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't.
All right, fine. But, you know, there's also parents out there that don't want to keep score. There's also people out there that think we ought to get rid of rules. There's people out there that want to just, they want to take all of the guts out of life. And it makes me sick. It makes me real sick. I'm Vernon Dozier.
What?
Is that it?
No, we're still on the air.
But why did they tell me? I told the guy that I wanted to lock out with I'm Vernon Dozier and then music.
Oh, I forgot.
You forgot.
What do you mean lock out with Vernon Dozier and then music?
What was going to happen is he's going to say I'm Vernon Dozier.
And then you were going to lock out with music.
That was the plan, yeah. That thing they play in NFL football, that's what I wanted to hear. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, you know that? What is this? Oh, here it is here. Okay. I'm Vernon Dozier.
No, this isn't it. This is my bumper music.
All right, this is the last time I'm ever on your program. It's the last time I ever talked to that guy with the plate in his head.
Don't ever make promises, bud, without talking to me.
I told the guy...
Don't ever make promises without talking to me. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Oh, baby.
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And we thank Coach Dozier for being with us. I hope that the coach takes it in the spirit it's intended, the advice and the differences of opinion that we have. I still think there's a place for good old-fashioned parenting, and I don't think that when a young man becomes a football player in high school, he has to just cut himself off completely from his family and butch up and man up and all that stuff. So keep making that applesauce cake bomb. All right, this hour we're going to have with us a young man who has a mobile DJ service and has had his hand in this sort of... the tangential aspects of entertainment, while he also works as a telemarketer. His name is Chris Norton from Redondo Beach, California. We're going to talk with him here about these late-night ads. Now, you know, we're on the radio here late at night on the West Coast and East Coast, all across America, right about the time that we're getting off the air. And I can flip on the TV, and Bud and Robert, you know this. There are ads there for... all kinds of adult products, and I'm talking about sexual products. And there's also, as fate would have it, or as irony would have it, or as the, you know, however the you want to look at it, there are ads there for Christian singles and Christian. There's one called Christian Mingles. And joining us tonight from the telemarketing conclave there in Redondo Beach is Chris Norton. Chris, you also do telemarketing for a pharmaceutical company.
I do, Mr. Henry. Right now we're wrapping up. This is the third annual sort of a product show that a lot of people go to. Yes, sir.
And but your mobile DJ business is an entertainment business.
Yes, sir.
And tell me about what gave you the idea for this. You want to do a kind of a cleaned up version of a bachelorette party?
I'm kind of nervous right now.
But you're doing fine.
I was watching pretty much the same late-night TV that you watch, and I saw on there the ads for, these Twister and these are vibrating, marital aids is what they are. I mean, one of them is made by Trojan, which also makes, condoms. There is another one called Adam and Eve, which I think is some oils or something, some sex products. And then I saw the Christian Mingles ad, and the Christian Mingles ad came up right after I saw this vibrator ad. So I was sort of struck by that and recognized, that there is a need for sensuality and sexuality in our lives, even if you are Christian. And I am personally myself not a Christian, but I feel like I could provide, I felt that I could provide a service that way, and that is for a Christian bachelorette parties that are, I guess it would be, innocent and not be as sexual and like a lot of them are.
Well, tell me what you mean. So we're talking about a regular bachelorette party. We're talking about something with what?
You're going to have a dancer probably, and I have done dancing at bachelorette parties before. I've danced in clubs, that cater to women.
So you are a well-built guy, and
I would say I am, yeah, and I'm know, I'm very handsome. I'm not saying that because of ego. I just, I am very handsome, and I'm very sensual. I have a lot of sensual energy. So, you know, my idea was to have bachelorette parties that will cater to the Christian, or just the people that are not, you know, they don't want to have a bachelorette party where there's necessarily a guy that's stripping down to a G-string, that kind of thing.
Okay, so... So we know what we're talking about here. Are you talking about coming in and dancing?
Primarily, yes, sir. And that's really, when you talk about bachelorette parties, when it comes to a dancer, that's pretty much all the women want. They want to have a guy that, you know, will come in and will dance. And they want some sexuality and sensuality, you know. But a lot of women don't necessarily, you know, need to have... I mean, if you're good enough... which I, you know, do feel that I am that, you know, good enough, then you don't have to take your clothes off or just wear a G-string.
So what? So tell me what you would do then. If we're talking about a bachelorette party where you're not stripping down to a G-string, you're a handsome guy, though. You got a good build.
Yes, sir, yeah.
Okay, and so what are you doing? How is your act different, and how is yours a little bit more... moral, I don't know how you want to say it.
I don't want to say it's immoral to have a guy dance in a G-string, but I would say ours more, just more oriented to a Christian, you know.
Okay, but you're not a Christian.
I mean, I'm saying to you that I'm not a Christian. I will say in if we get phone calls, if they'll say, well, are you a Christian dancer? But I don't know if they will or not. We haven't really...
I think if you had Christians wanting to do business with your company, I think a lot of times they want to know if you are or not. But that's just, I don't know.
I might, you know, say that I am, because I was raised Christian, so it wouldn't be a lie or anything. But
Tell me what this act of yours would be. It's for a bachelorette party.
Yes, sir.
And what would you do?
Well, basically, all it is dance. I have a dance, you know, I have a my mobile DJ service that I already use. I've got a variety of drum machines and a variety of sounds, like keyboard sounds, Casio sounds. And then I also have popular music, dance music. And I would come in wearing a really nice fitting suit, basically the kind of suit that you would wear, you know, if you are in a dance competition. I don't know if you've seen, like, Dance with a Star or something like that. I mean, those guys wear, you know, dancer slacks and...
Right. They've got on shirts, and but they don't have suits on.
They don't, but you could. You could wear a suit, and that's what I would do. I would make it a full suit with a coat, tie, you know, and a tie clip and, you know, just everything, like a kerchief. Money clip and only the shoes are the only thing different would be I'd be in dancing shoes, and then you come in and you start the music and you begin to do your dance, and you're going up to the different bachelorettes and different, you know, women, and, you know, dancing for them and everything. So it's not really that much different.
But you're fully clothed. In other words, you're not.
Yeah, I'm not stripped down. But I think. What makes this really a great idea is you could do this. If there could be kids, there could be like a 12-year-old girl there. There could be a 13, you know, underage girls could be there, and you don't have to worry about it being nasty. Even though there is sexuality, it's not nasty, you know.
And you're saying it's not nasty?
Yes, sir.
All right. How does one dance sexually, even if you're in a suit, as you say that you would be in? How do you dance sexually, or how do you emit sensuality?
Well, I mean, you can still do the same kind of dance moves. You can move your hips, even though you are in a full suit with a coat and tie and so forth. You can still dance up to, like the bachelorette. Let's say she's, you know, she's the guest of honor, I guess, at her own party. So I would, you know, dance up to her, you know, with kind of. Showing sexuality, and that would...
What does that mean?
I mean, that would involve moving your hips, and I'm moving my hips, but I'm in a suit and tie, and so, and I'm also, I'm you know, bending over and touching my toes and stuff, you know, basic dance moves, but I'm in a coat and tie, and then you get into a squat, you can do that, but I'm in a squat while I'm wearing a coat, a tie, and possibly a vest. And
you're in a coat and a tie and a vest.
Well, sometimes. It depends. It depends on what they request, because they're going to request a look. You can say, I come in a suit. I'll come in a suit with a vest. I can come in a tuxedo. I can come in a... there's a lot of different looks.
But it's all sort of this suit and tie thing. I have to tell you, and I think it's a good question, do you think it is still, if you've got a 12-year-old or 13-year-old girls there, like you said you could, even if you're undulating your hips, isn't that a little sexual?
Not if you're in a full suit. You know, if you're in wingtips and...
You said you had dance shoes?
Well, maybe I have dance shoes. Maybe the carpeting or the flooring is good enough where you could just wear wingtips. If you're in wingtips and like a tweed, maybe they want you to dress up like you're a English professor. So you're in a tweed jacket and a vest and wingtips. Even if you are doing those moves, you are sort of like, looking like an English professor is the best way I know how to do it.
All right, we're talking to Chris Norton about his... we were discussing all of the late-night adult TV ads right next to the Christian Mingle ad. So you've got, on the one hand, the Trojan Vibrations ad, and then you have the Christian Mingles. And you're doing a bachelorette, a DJ service, where you dance for the women, only you're in a suit.
Yeah, different suits, yes, sir. Or tuxedo or something like that. But always with a set... Always with the cess up front. You know, if you're wearing, like, for instance, a tuxedo, you want to make sure that the cess is always very up front and relevant. If your sensuality and the sensuality, and...
Well, we say the what? The sexuality?
Sexuality and sensuality.
Sexuality and sensuality?
Yes, sir. Is up front, then it doesn't matter if you're in a tuxedo. It doesn't really matter. Especially, if you are in formal wear or something like that. I mean, it's excellent, and I think women will find it to be an excellent way of spending the evening.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Chris Norton there at a pharmaceutical gathering in Redondo Beach. 877-876-7445 on the idea of a Christian bachelorette party where Mr. Norton, he's a dancer and has done dancing for women's parties. He would come dressed in a suit and or a variety of different suits to entertain women who, are of that persuasion. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
It really is.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. With us is Chris Norton. Mr. Norton is a telemarketer, but he's also an entrepreneur in the entertainment business. As we've been discussing, late-night television increasingly getting, risky. It's not risky, but there's increasingly more sex products,
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. I mean, when you were talking about the Twister, and a Twister is for someone like myself. I've danced for women. For whatever reason, I mean, I'm very attractive, very handsome, and so women do get attracted to me. And so I have, in my own personal life, used Twister and some of these other products. I'm very familiar with the SAS products. But I was thinking, as soon as they show the Twister, then they also show Christian Mingle. And I'm thinking, well, what are the Christian woman, what does she get? Because most likely they're not going to use a Twister.
You don't think Christian women would use that?
Not my experience. I mean, I shouldn't say that, but I have had experience with Christian women. And they do not many times will say, they don't say don't use Twister, because I'm not going to say to them, hey, look, I've got a Twister. They're going to say just don't use.
Okay, well, I don't want to know any more about that. So getting back to what you do, and what we're talking about here is Chris's business booking bachelorette parties where you dance in a far more modest way, I think is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah.
and you don't strip down to a G-string like a lot of the guys do. You keep your clothes on, but you are wearing... So, what's the attraction? I realize if a woman is, you know, a Christian or she's moral or whatever you want to say, you say, oh, I keep my clothes on. I suppose that's good, but what... You know,
well, I mean, I am very handsome, and that's if for a great many women who are, you know, very religious, especially like if they're a Christian, you could say, well, I'm not a strip, you know, which they can't really say, yeah, strip, because their religion's not going to let them. But if you tell them, but I am very handsome, that's a big plus, because at least they know that you're going to show up and you're going to be handsome, you know. And I also am built, you know, I do work out, you know, daily. In fact, I work out on weights, Mr. Henry, every other day, so I let the muscle tissue, you know, build back up. And
I don't know anything about that. So you've got a very good workout regimen.
Yeah, I do. I work out, and I also do cardiovascular every other day, and I do muscle every other day. I'm very good looking, so I tell them, you know, well, I'm... not going to strip down, which I know you don't want because of the Christianity, but I am, you know, good looking.
Okay, so tell me some of the suits you wear, and are you going to do a little bit of the dance for us here, or?
Well, I know we're on the radio, but I was going to give you a description, and I got one of, you know, a girl that I know is here. What's your name? Okay, Karen, K-R-I-N, yeah. Is here and she's going to help me out. She's got the music.
Is this a girlfriend or?
She's So she has. I have the music here and I could do it. But what I do is I get into a variety of different suits, you know, and I'll show up at the bachelorette party and I'll do a very accessible dance. But I'm dressed either in a tweed jacket or I can wear a chef outfit.
A chef outfit. So you're wearing professional outfits as well.
The chef outfit, I wear an apron and a hat, you know, but I'm doing this really sexy dance, and women they like that because women like to see men in their work clothes, but also be sexed, you know, be well-sexed, you know.
Well-sexed, okay, so what are you wearing right now, just out of curiosity?
As a matter of fact, I do have on, it's one of the costumes we pick up a day, and I put it on when you were doing your commercials, it's the chef. I'm in the chef outfit. We call it Boyardee, which is like a...
Call it like Chef Boyardee?
Well, no, it's not Chef Boyardee, but we call it Boyardee. That's the code name for it, Boyardee. So if someone calls in and says, you know, we want to book your bachelorette party, like you come and dance, and we say, well, okay, I can come as a college I can come in the tweed jacket, I can come as an insurance salesman, I can come as a, you know, an inspector, I can come as a... we have one, I think we got the other one, Karen? Yeah, we got a... A lot of people will, a lot of women are excessively, you know, excited about workmen. We have one who is the bug, like the exterminator, like Orkin Man.
And you have an Orkin Man outfit.
Yes, sir. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but, and then they said, well, and then we have a chef. So I'm in the chef outfit.
Well, go ahead and do your dance. This is Chris Norton is going to give us an example of the dance that you do. So you're in a chef outfit right now, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, turn around. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I've got on my chef hat. I've got on an apron, and I'm wearing just basically petroleum-based shoes that you would wear in a modern commercial kitchen. And don't turn it up that loud. Don't turn it up that loud. All right. Do. Okay. 1, 2. Now I'm doing a hip hunch. I'm doing my hip hunch back and forth with the hips and the buttocks. Whoa. Yeah. This is where you're moving up to the woman. The bachelorette, Mr. Henry?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm dancing up to her with my hips going back and forth. Yeah, love train, yeah. Then you turn around. What you do is you try to get the... Then you tell the bachelorette to grab your hip, your butt, or not your butt, but... And then you do, like, a love train around the room with all the women, and you're dancing. I've got a big spoon. So what it is it's really turn off for me. What it is it's really kind of a fun, that's the beginning of it. It's not too set. Then it will begin to get accessible, you know.
Okay, because what you just described there is you're dancing around the room.
No, I'm not dancing around the room. It's a love train with the other women.
Right, okay, but you've got a big spoon, did you say?
Yeah, this is part of the costume. Don't fixate on the spoon. It's the costume looks a lot like if you saw the Anderson Split Pea billboard. You ever see the Split Pea?
Yeah, Anderson Split Pea Soup, yeah.
You see those two chefs?
Yeah. Oh, okay, so you look like one of those guys?
Yeah, except I'm fit, I'm set, you know, I'm very sexy, I've got, but they've got a giant spoon, so I dance around with the women, and I got a spoon, the giant spoon. Maybe I'll lose the spoon, but I think it's a fun way. And the spoon is also very accessible because the spoon I use as a prop as sort of a phallic later on in the dance when it gets really heated up. Then the spoon becomes, you know, like a probing instrument.
All right. Well, go ahead and finish your dance. We got another minute.
Well, we got to start it all over again.
Okay, so we're going to go to our break.
Got to start.
Now turn it off. Turn it off.
Turn it off. Karen, turn it off.
We'll be right back. Okay, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Chris Norton with us as he talks about his bachelorette business where he dances in a very moral and very modest way. He doesn't strip his clothes off in case you're a woman of, you're religious. He dances in a suit. In this instance, though, he had on a chef outfit with a giant spoon. It sounds, I'm going to have to ask him, what happens if it gets a little too comic? Because that sounds a little comic. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. Woo!
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. On the line with us is Chris Norton from Redondo Beach tonight, and we're talking about a new mobile entertainment service that you're providing, Chris, which is a Christian bachelorette presentation, that is a dancer yourself, because you've had this dancing experience, entertaining women. True. I mean, you did say that you.
I have now, Mr. Henry. I've had a great deal of experience entertaining at, you know, bachelorette, as well as, you know, I've done some dancing at, and I've also done some. I mean, I don't know what if you want to know about it, but I have also done, yes, you know, some adult film, but I'm not doing that no more.
Okay. 877-876-PHIL is our number. You were, and we're going to get some phone calls, but you were demonstrating your dance, and I just wanted to be clear that, is that it there?
Yeah, play it, yeah, okay, so, what question do you have, Mr. Henry?
With the fact that you're dancing around the room with a spoon, and my question was, does it get comic?
No, sir, it's not comic at all. I mean, you have to understand women. Kill the music. I think you need to understand women, Mr. Henry. I have been with women. I've been with many women in my life, and I know that, you know, women is they entertained by workmen and guys who are doing their job, and it's very, you know, masculine and everything. So when I show up as, you know, as a chef or as the organ man, it may sound comic to you, but it's very accessible for women to see that. It's very sensuality.
And the organ man, though. I mean, there's something about that's pretty funny, don't you think?
No, I mean, no, not if you understand women the way I understand them. And women, they like the idea of a workman coming into the house, and he's all, you know, yeah, where's, you know, and you got to understand, he comes into the house. I'm not being threatening or nothing like that, but I'm very accessible, and I have, you know, maybe a few buttons open, and I also have the canister. I'm going to spray for ants or something. And the sexuality is what you need to understand about it. And so that's what we do you turn the music off. That's what we do in the dance. I'll also start things off with like a gong sound effect and then start the music.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Let's go over to Mavis. Hi, Mavis, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Mr. Henry, I'm here with a man is saying, and I will tell you, I'm a Christian woman.
Yes, ma'am.
And I don't know if you can hear me. I sound very noisy on my phone right now.
I can hear you.
I'm a Christian woman. And I can tell you that what I'm hearing this man talking about if he may say he's wearing a suit or he got on a chef outfit or something, but it sounds very immoral to me.
Well,
go ahead, Chris.
Ma'am, I'm just curious. What is it about what I'm doing that's immoral? I mean, I'm not taking, you know, my clothes off.
You are dancing around the room. You are front. You said you're doing a hip thrust.
Is that what you're doing, Chris?
Well, I mean, yeah, we're doing a hip thrust. What I'm doing, basically...
You said you were dancing up to the women. I can't hear what you're saying. Yeah, you're dancing up to the women, and you're punching your hip, what we used to call a hip punch. And
I don't know what that is.
A hip punch when you're basically pushing your butt out. Are you going... My question is, excuse me for saying, are you going butt first, or...
No, ma'am, we're not going butt first. I'm going the other way.
Well, all right, still. Then you said you flip around and you do a rumble line or something like that with a giant spoon.
Yes, ma'am.
And you said you use that giant spoon as a probing instrument.
Yes.
I've been to parties like that, Mr. Henry. I don't want anything to do with it.
When you say you've been to a party like that, you're talking about a Chippendale style dancer?
No, I'm talking about I've seen these... These props. He talked about he was going to show up as an organ man. That I went to a party on the 1978. I've gone to a party. They had an organ man who was going to dance. And it was a girlfriend. My girlfriend, her boyfriend was going to dance. He'd been the organ man. And he showed up with an organ man outfit and everything. Had a canister. You talk about a probe instrument. Had a can of insect, a bug spray. And that's supposed to be sexy? I know some girls that thought it was sexy. You know, but I didn't...
No, ma'am, that's not supposed to be sexy. I mean, bug spray is not sexy. The bug spray is just a prop. It's not the sexuality.
And that's another thing I want to say. I can't understand anything you're saying at all. You're going sexy. You sound like you are missing a bridge work.
I mean, what is she talking about?
Well, sounds like you got a little bit of a sinus thing.
I can tell you... That the act that I do is sexy. It's very sexy.
Right there, very sexy. And you're dressing up like a chef. It sounds immoral to me.
Okay, the immorality that you're talking about, Mavis, I'm gathering, is from the fact that even though he may be in a suit, you know, he's still dressing.
Yeah, that's right. He's still dressing. He's in a suit, but he's still he's doing a butt punch. He's leaping around the room with a probe.
Ma'am, I didn't say it was a probe. I said sometimes you can use it as a probe. And
well, wait, what else are you leaping around the room with a spoon? I know you're a chef.
That's the prop, because I'm a chef.
I know you're a chef, but you said you would use the spoon at some future moment as a probe. Now, I told you I was at a bachelorette party one time. I've been to all kinds of bachelorette parties. I'm a Christian woman, and I believe very much in the salvation of my soul to Jesus Christ. So you can't fool me. And I've been down into some sewers in my life. I went to a bachelorette party one time. Man had a probe there. He come like the organ man, just like you say. I remember another man came with a pool boy. He had a big net. But every time you talk about probe...
Well, that doesn't sound very moral either. It doesn't sound very modest, the probe instrument. I don't know what you're talking about there, so I have to agree with the lady.
All I'm saying is it's just a prop. I don't really use it for nothing.
But for me to run around a room and I'm dancing behind a man with a giant spoon, I feel like I look like the biggest fool on earth. I look like the biggest fool on earth.
Well, I'm sorry to feel that way, man, but if you want, you can call. I can give you my number later on. Do you have someone?
Yeah, my niece is going to get married, but I ain't going to call you up and have you come over her house in a chef costume.
I can wear a different costume.
What other kind of costume you got?
Well, he's going to be wearing suits.
Well, I don't have a problem with a suit, but what can... You said you got a tweed jacket? No. I don't like anything he's saying.
Well, ma'am, I've got also... I can come dressed as an insurance salesman, as a dentist.
A dentist?
What's sexy about coming dressed as a dentist?
I told... Mr. Henry, I'm what... See, the Seth is me.
You the Seth?
Yes, I'm the Seth. I'm the Seth, and so when I show up, the Seth has arrived. Doesn't matter what kind of costume I wear, you know.
If it doesn't matter what kind of costume you wear, then why are you even dressing up in any kind of a costume at all?
Bingo.
Because it does matter the costume. But the sense, I can dress up like in a chef costume. I can dress up in a like I'm cleaning the pool. I can dress up in that. But the sense is the same.
I don't.
All right. Well, Mavis, thank you for your call.
I wouldn't hire this guy to change the cat box. I could.
All right, 877-876-7445 here on the Phil Hendry Show with Chris Norton. That lady obviously is not representative, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, she said she had a niece, but she's elderly, you know, and I don't know whether that's...
877-876-7445 is our number. When I say not representative, she is elderly, but she's also somebody who's in that demographic as a Christian, you know.
That's the part that I was, you know, was hoping for, and I thought she'd, you know, understand that, you know, if I get into a chef outfit, I'm going for broke. You know, I'm not just going to be.
But she didn't like that. She didn't like that. 877-876-7445. Let's go over to Margaret in Santa Monica. Margaret, go ahead.
Yes, so I'm listening to this man, and I find what he's saying to be interesting. And I'm finding what he's saying to be original. I don't really know how sexy one can look in a chef outfit per se, but I will tell you that I've seen very many attractive men dressed in all kinds of work clothes. It's a little different for women.
Absolutely, yes, ma'am.
When you say you dress as the Orkin man, you're talking about an exterminator.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I dress as but I have a little Orkin man patch. Also, Wesser Exterminator.
Who is that again?
Wesser Exterminator.
You say Western Exterminator?
Sound like Western Exterminator.
Yes, ma'am, Wesser.
Uh-huh. And you wear the uniform and you come in with the canister with the poison?
Yes, ma'am, we do. Well, there's not real poison in it. I mean, a lot of times we put margarita mix in there or something like that.
Uh-huh. Do you dress, for instance, I could ask you this. Do you dress... And this, again, Phil, is if you're talking about what women like, and you are dressed in a suit, and there is a potential for explosive sexuality, do you dress as a Jehovah's Witness? Do you know what I mean by that?
You talk about like a white suit, something like that?
Yes, there are some of them wear the white suits.
I don't know if that's a Jehovah's Witness.
I have seen a Christians who ride the bikes and wear a white buck. They wear a white buck shoe, like
a white sport coat. You know the song, A White Sport Coat and a Pink Carnation? Do you know that song?
No, ma'am, I don't know that.
Well, that is something that I had in mind for a bachelorette party that we're planning for a young woman. She is the daughter of a dear friend of mine. And as you were talking about having a very moral and Christian bachelorette party, and I'm wondering if you ever dressed in the white missionary suit that you see... so very often in East Los Angeles in the Hollenbeck Division.
The what?
Hold on, Phil, okay? Go ahead.
I have not been the Hollenbeck Division in East L.A. I don't know.
What do you mean the Hollenbeck Division?
There's a kind of a Christian missionary in a white suit. Let me talk to the man. Do you dress like a Jehovah's Witness?
I thought, yes, we will. We will wear the white. You want me to dress? I can. And
it's a short white shirt with a thin black tie?
Yes, I can do that.
Oh, God. Oh, that is interesting. That's very interesting.
Margaret, let me ask you something.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to ask. So this is a bachelorette party that you're planning?
Yes, it's for Candy Dugan's daughter. She's getting married. And I was listening, and I thought, well, this is interesting. I was getting interested. But now he says he can show up and dance dressed as a Jehovah's Witness, and I just find that terribly exciting. It's terribly exciting.
Let me, I'll give you an example of what I'm doing. You can imagine me in a Hobo Witness or how it is.
A Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, turn it up. Turn it up, Karen. Yeah.
Oh, God.
And so what I'm doing now is
So you're doing the butt punch.
Yeah, I'm doing a butt punch now. Moving toward, moving forward, moving forward, moving forward, moving forward. Why'd you keep stopping it? Don't stop it and start it again.
Who is that woman that you have working with you? Because she sounds stupid.
Oh, she is. She's really stupid. Okay, yeah. Yeah. love Trey. Now I'm taking the thin, I'm just imagining this, I'm taking the thin Jehovah's Witness tie and I'm swirling, you know, I'm swirling it and twirling it and everything.
Yeah, you're twirling it.
Yeah, that's, is that what you call it?
Yeah, that's what you call it.
But boy, you've done a lot of dancing, you don't know what it's called?
Hold on, Mr. Merrick.
Yeah, Bill, just back off.
And now I'm doing just, yeah, butt punch, now there's a hip punch, now I'm turning around, and I'm turning around now, and I'm going butt first. Okay.
And then comes the rumble line.
Now comes the rumble line, yeah. Instead of the spoon, I'm waving that witness, you know, magazine, where that thing's called. And
yeah, the Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, boy. You know, I think that this is, I would consider this to be bigotry.
What are you talking about?
I just think it's very bigoted. Turn that off, will you, please?
Turn it off, Karen.
What are you talking about?
I think it's a very unfair characterization of a religion that... I think you're mocking a religion unfairly.
Well, Mr. Henry...
Hold on, Chris, hold on. Don't upset your pretty self. Phil, you're talking to Margaret Gray. I'm a journalist. I believe in free speech. Are you trying to tell me that we're not allowed to make fun of Jehovah's Witnesses? We've been doing it for almost a full century. And
well, Margaret...
No, hold on. And for you to tell me that I can't mock a Jehovah's Witness...
It just seemed a little unfair, you know?
Well, look at you. I thought you were Mr. Free Speech.
I am free speech. Nobody's telling you. I just thought, you know...
Sorry, you know, I'm trying to get a business going. For you to just, you know, take a dump on it.
Look at you. Yeah, exactly, Chris. You're defecating on this man's business.
I won't have that kind of talk, all right? And
oh, God, so we can make fun of Jehovah's Witnesses. You can't say the word defecate. You can't...
Thank you.
Boy, you hanging up a lot of people this week.
Yeah, well, stick around, man. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Yes, that's right. I don't know. Maybe that was a very square conservative moment, but I just don't like singling out. I mean, 877-876-7445, the Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The
Get
Phil
you.
Henry Show.
I'm going to try and do that, too.
Well, what you should do is...
Hold on. We're on the air here, folks. Phil Henry here on with Margaret Gray. Chris Dornton is joining us as we continue our conversation. I'm sorry that I hung up on you. I had to cut you off. We were going to a commercial break, and the conversation was getting a little out of control.
Well, Phil, I'm not really accustomed to having people tell me what to do. I know that you have a radio show, and I know that you have to... obviously, you have to guide the programming, but this young man, Mr. Norton, was talking about something that I think has great potential. If he's talking about doing this, is that the music I'm hearing, Chris?
Yes, sir. I'm just doing some. I'm just practicing some dance steps.
You're practicing now?
Yes, sir. I'll show you. Yeah. If you can imagine, I'm just doing. Now I'm doing a kind of a, you know, it's kind of an Irish jig that I do, but it's called Sessy, too. It's a Sessy jig.
And you have your hands up at the side like you're doing a Scottish little thing?
Yeah, kind of like the way the Scottish people do it.
Oh, God. That I can see it. I can see it in my mind's eye.
Karen, what do you think? See?
Who is Karen? Are you serious about her?
Yeah, you know.
I'd like to talk to you later about...
Okay, look, that's fine. So he's doing an Irish jig. What else?
Well, now he scared me.
Bill, don't yell at him.
What are you, his manager all of a sudden? What else are you doing, Chris?
Well, right now, I was just working on this other dance step. Turn it up, Karen. Get this train. I'm thinking about a train, but I'm also thinking about as a Jehovah's Witness, you know. So I'm trying to figure out what the name of that magazine is. Oh, Watchtower. That's the name of that.
Yeah, Watchtower.
Okay, so Watchtower... So I'm pointing to my watch, and then I'm waving Watchtower as if it...
As if time's running out.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, that's sexy. God!
People, time's running out, yeah.
So, all right, that's good. To have whatever her name is.
Turn it down, Carolyn. Oh, wait, I like...
I forgot to tell you, I do the I do harmony to this.
Yeah, that's real good, Chris. Okay, I get it.
And then I go back to dancing.
All right, have Karen turn that off.
Turn it off, honey.
Okay, where did we lose the line, or are we... oh, there they are. You back?
The things they do.
Well, my idea was this, and I want to just run this by you, Chris, and you, Phil, too, as well, Phil. You're in on this.
Yeah, it is my show, and I am...
Yes, yes, we know, Phil, it's your show. God.
Always like this?
Yeah, every time I call him up, he's like, oh, it's my show.
Don't talk about me like I'm not here, if you don't mind.
Sorry. Here is my idea, Chris. When you say it's time, the Watchtower, it's time, what you have done, and I think this is terribly exciting, you have taken the concept of the apocalypse, of the rapture, and you have wrapped sex around it. And I think it is unique. I think... What do you think, Phil?
I think it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
You think it's the stupidest thing you've ever heard?
Yeah, Mr. Irwin, I mean, Miss Gray...
I just think the whole idea, you know, we're living in a day and age now where everything has sex wrapped around it. It doesn't make any difference. Even breakfast has sex wrapped around it. Brushing your teeth has sex wrapped around it. Buying furniture, buying socks, jock itch, venereal disease.
Well, of course venereal disease has sex wrapped around it.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. Even the least sexy, least the most life-threatening, the ugliest things, somehow we have to put sex into the equation. So for you to say that you want to have sex injected into the concept of the apocalypse, I can't get my head around it.
That's because you don't think creatively. Is that the end music? He always plays this end music.
You mean like end times or?
No, the end of the hour. I'd like to talk to you about this. I think this is wonderful. Guys in short white shirts, black ties, pointing at their watches, waving the Watchtower, and then butt first, butt punches. Just wah. Do it again. Yes. Yes. Oh, God. Phil,
Thank you very much.
Don't you dare hang.
I just did. Phil Henry Show, our News and Information Hour, coming up next here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. Pointing at your watch.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and
4 a.m. on the East.
4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. We go places other talk shows wish they had the guts to go, but they don't. You know, it's one thing to do one of these talk shows where you're just giving your stupid opinion. It's another thing to give a stupid opinion and provide some level of entertainment value. And that's what we do. We've got dumb opinions, no question about it. But we also go that extra mile for you. Anyway, one thing we haven't mentioned all night long, which is an absolute sin when you stop to think of the enormous amount of money that we make. I mean, when you stop to think of the fine service it provides you guys. And that is our website, philhenryshow.com. I'd like you to head over to philhenryshow.com and pick up a backstage pass. You can check out and see what it is we all have got for you over there. We have live streaming video of the show every night, Phil TV in HD, so you can watch as well as listen. We have the podcast every day of every day's preceding show, every night's preceding show, or every preceding night show, I should say. We have thousands of hours, over a decade's worth of archived radio shows, full three-hour shows, such a big archive that we are only now completing it. We are only now... After taking over this website, completing it, we've got like two more months to go, and we will have the full, since we started our national show, and we've got a lot of local shows in there too, the full national archive of our radio show. And plenty of other things too, so visit us at philhenryshow.com, and you'll be glad that you did. Here's a story here, man. Like I really honestly needed to see this.
What?
Poll regarding Trayvon, or I hope I'm pronouncing the young man's name right, Trayvon Martin. Poll regarding Trayvon Martin's killing shows racial divide.
Well, that doesn't surprise you?
Why would that surprise me? you can talk till you're blue in the face, and you got people who are going to say to you, here's the thing. If you say there's no racism at all in this issue, it's just that they're wrong, well, somewhere along the line, you're going to have to open your eyes up to something. You're being racial.
Yeah, but I mean, black people say that he got killed by the white man but because the police are covering up.
Well, maybe they got their reasons for saying the police are covering it up. Let's take this as honestly as we can. Let's be courageous here. Black people are saying, not all, but if it's fallen down on racial lines...
Yeah, might as well say it is.
Okay, fine. One of the starkest differences... Let me just give you an example here before we go any further. 73% of black people... Now, what does this mean, 73%? This is a USA Today Gallup poll. 73% of black people said they think George Zimmerman would have been arrested if Trayvon was white. Only 33% of white people agreed. Now, I can hear all the white folks right now. Oh, there they go again, making a big deal out of it. I know exactly what they say. And they're wrong. Because the perception, you can't tell somebody whether they're right. You can't say to someone, you have no right to your perception. Unless, of course, you're saying there's something wrong with you. Basically, you're black, so there's something wrong with you. You know, in other words, you can't say to a guy, well, you must be wrong. You're wrong. Well, why am I wrong? Because it's not like that. How do you know it's not like that? Because it's fair. How do you know it's fair? You're not my color. Oh, you're making a big deal on... How do you know I'm making a big deal out of nothing? Now, let's take the other side. Let's go to the white side of this thing.
Okay. What are you going to say? The white man's got his reason?
Hold on for a minute. White people look at the news. The experience with black people is different than black people's experience with white people. Black guys' experience with white people may be through the police, through... I'm just giving you the stark and stereotypical, though it may be, reality. Through either the police, through either an employer... I'm talking about the negative... experiences that a black man may have with a white man, through the cops, through an employer, through perhaps the judgment of a girlfriend or a male friend's parents. All right, now let's take whites. What's their experience? Well, as much as white people say my best friends are black, or they don't know where their ass from a hole in the ground. I don't give a damn. That's just the facts. Now, I know that there's probably the odd white person out there that's had a great deal of intrapersonal contact with black people throughout their life. I don't doubt that that's true. I'm talking about the average experience of the average white person in America. Don't give me this bull crap about how your best friends are this or that, because they ain't. And don't give me this stuff about how, you know, this, that, and something else. The white person's experience with black people generally is through the media. Now, the media... is something that whites have come to trust, although in recent years their trust begins to erode a little bit because of things like Watergate and so forth. But nonetheless, their experience is through media, and the media tells them what? Gangs are black. Violent drug-dealing gangs are black. Violent drug-dealing young people wear those hoodies. And if you're really stupid, and George Zimmerman strikes me as a pretty stupid guy, you put all of that together the wrong way, and you become very, very frightened. Now, not everybody's going to pull a gun and kill a kid wearing a hoodie. Not everyone's going to pull a gun and confront somebody wearing a hoodie. But I will tell you this much. Your average white person, if they see a black kid walking down the street with a hoodie on, and it's after dark, and the kid's walking kind of slow, and he's on the phone, they have, in their mind, they have fixed an image. And the image is of someone who is suspect. And I'm telling you the truth. And white folks know I'm telling the truth. Now, they'll deny it till they're blue in the face. If they're in a room full of black people, they'll lie up and down and say it isn't true. And maybe it's good. Maybe they don't want to cause a fight. They don't, you know, everybody, you know, there is, I will give you this much. people of goodwill want to get along. We may not know what the hell it is we're talking about, and we may not have a very good perception of things, but we want to learn, I hope.
Yeah, but you were saying the other night, people don't even want to learn about it. They just want to be stuck in their own opinion.
Well, in a lot of ways, they do. Now, a black guy says, cop, not fair. Okay? And a white guy says, kid in a hoodie, dangerous. It's very possible that those two guys are wrong in every single solitary instance that they see that. It's very, very possible. And here's where we get into the problem. I'm not saying that African Americans' perception of cops is wrong. It's absolutely right. They have been. It's true. You can't avoid it, so quit trying to. Cops historically have crapped all over black people. You can't also deny that the perception of white people, of young black men in hoods, shaped as it is by way of the media.
Yeah, right. The black guy didn't say you don't watch TV.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you give a. That's no excuse. Hold on. Hold on. Just hold on for a second, because let me tell you this. Okay. It's also a fact that I can't get in my car and drive through Compton or South Central at this particular hour without most likely somebody either aiming a slingshot at my car, trying to ding it, maybe even taking a shot at it, and if I'm really unlucky, trying to carjack me. You going to deny that that's going to happen?
What did you say?
Let's say if I'm in Southgate. You going to deny that that's going to happen? I'm driving in my Jaguar.
No, you're in a Jaguar.
Well, wait a minute, man. There's nothing that says, I don't have a sign on my Jaguar that says, jack my car. Are you telling me my perception is wrong? Now, there's reasons for that. And a black guy looking at a cop and saying, that guy isn't fair to me. That guy is a racist. That cop is going to, he's going to arrest me. He's going to unfairly charge me. He's going to, I'll probably be beaten up. Something bad's going to happen. I'm going to get railroaded. I don't trust that cop. Is that black guy wrong? No. Does he have his reasons for thinking that way? You better believe he does. And the sooner we get our heads around that, the better. And if you're going to ask me, of the two sides, black and white in America, which race has a lot more to learn, you're not going to like my answer.
Yeah, see, white people.
Exactly. White people have got a lot more of their head to pull out of their ass than black people do. Because what I've just said to you, the fact that much of our perception of black America is shaped through the media is very significant. Where a black man can say, I've had personal experience, and I dare say that just about every African American in this country, with rare exception, has had interaction with the police or interaction with some form of authority on that level that hasn't been very positive. On the other hand, what do white people got? We got TV, and that's what we see, and that's what we see in the news, and that's how we form our opinions. And so what's the end result? We have a far more fictitious layer to get through. Nonetheless, there's a high element of truth to what we see, and that's reinforced, for instance, as I just said. I get into my Jaguar, I drive down through Compton, ba ba bo 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 boom.
Yeah, but you understand, man, you don't drive through that neighborhood in a Jaguar. You're asking for it.
Well, maybe I am asking for it, but here's the thing. Why am I the target of violence? Why am I the target of theft? Why would I be the target of a carjack?
Because you got a Jaguar.
Well, wait, hold on for a minute. So in other words, what you're telling me, Robert, is I just went down into a primarily black neighborhood, and so therefore I'm going to be ripped off.
No, in that neighborhood, if you go to Inglewood, you go to parts of like Baldwin Hills, you're going to get ripped off.
So you're saying in a middle-class black neighborhood?
Yeah. You said Southgate. You said South Central. Those are bad neighborhoods.
All right. But again, you know, the impression is shaped through the media and through personal experience, you know.
Didn't you say one time that guy Donald carjacked you?
Who? No, I didn't almost get carjacked.
What was that one time you went down, the guy said, I'll get your gas?
That wasn't a carjacking, man. I ran out of gas on a harbor freeway, and I walked to get gasoline. What do you get out of here, bud?
That was some guy who said Superfly.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty funny, actually, because the dude that pulled up was the funniest thing. That's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about, okay? And we're already late for a break. I'll tell you about that coming back, but it's just a funny story. 877-876-7445, world-famous Phil Henry Show, News and Information Hour, and like that, baby. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch.
You gotta talk about
the Phil Henry Show.
Shut up, bud. In the middle of the break. What are you talking about, bud?
Talking about some bull crap.
That's not bull crap. When that time, that one black guy asked me for money.
So he asked you for money. So what?
Yeah, but it was scary.
Well, whatever was scary. Why was it scary? Because he was black?
Yeah.
Why was that scary, man? All the guy did was ask you for money.
Because of time of night and everything.
But this is what I'm talking about here, man. You turn a story like that into a mugging. All that cat did was ask you for money. Next thing you know, people are going to think you were mugged because you're all, guess what else is going to happen to me?
Well, it scared me.
Well, so what? It scared you. There's probably a lot of stuff that scares you. Better get right down to it.
You don't have to talk like that.
Yes, I do have to talk like that. Let me tell you something, man. I just got done telling you that when white folks think that black people, an element, or whatever the hell you want, are dangerous, it is based on a perception that they've gotten through the media, as well as much rarer experience on the part of whites of actual encounters that were violent, shall we say, or encounters that were, uncomfortable, however the hell you want to call it, okay? There's this lock-solid perception. Black people have got a perception of cops based upon their experience that cops are not fair, the cops are going to screw them. And we got to, the only way we're ever going to get past all this stuff, folks, if we start accepting some things that we don't want to accept, that we just have to start to believe people and quit with this, racism's in the past, and why are they still worried about it? Anybody that says that is a racist. Anyone that says that racism's in the past and they should be over it by now is themselves a racist. I don't give a damn how many black people they know.
What about that black girl you went out with?
I was going to tell that story, man. This whole thing of driving while black. My girlfriend, when I was living in Miami, Minneapolis, was a young lady who was black named Yvonne. And she was an employee of a local radio station up there in Minneapolis, as I was. And she had the station van many times. It has the big call letters of the station on the side of it because she was in the engineering staff. So she was going out to remote broadcasts. She was going out to set up remote broadcasts. She was doing a lot of things, engineering, going to the transmitter, doing a lot of things. Somebody sees her driving, some stupid ass in Minneapolis, one of these Norwegians, excuse me for saying it, sees her driving the van and calls the cops.
Why?
Because they assumed it was stolen. They assumed it was stolen because it was a black chick driving it, a black person was driving it. Miles Davis, the great jazz trumpet player, I heard this story about him that is entirely substantiated and is kind of a sad testament. But he moved to Malibu here in Los Angeles County. And one of the first things he did was he went down to the sheriff's station and he said, hi. And they said, hi. And he says, my name is Miles Davis. I'm a musician. I'd like to show you my driver's license. I'd like you to take a good long look at me. Here's my home. Here's my address. I live here. I belong here. So that when I drive through Malibu late at night, because I'm coming back from a recording session, I will not be, he didn't say this to the cops.
Yeah, it would probably piss them off.
But, but what he did say was, hi, I live here. This is my address. How you guys doing? He introduced himself around. The message being, I belong here. So if you see me driving in my car and it's late at night, I'm not going to get pulled over. Now, that's not anybody's imagination. That's not people, I think I'll make a problem. That's some, they're trying to, solve a problem. I don't want to keep having these to deal with this stuff. Anyway, I don't want to get a whole long thing about this, which I just did, but none of this stuff is going to get changed, and none of this stuff is going to get solved until people start waking up. I mean, we're still, like, dead from the neck up on a lot of this stuff. Still thinking, and I'm not just talking about whites, either. I'm talking about black people, too. You know, this is not, it doesn't do any good. Let me just put you, just tell you something. It doesn't do any good at all when some cat is at a lecture and he hears the term black hole and he thinks it's racist.
What?
Yes.
No, man, that never happened.
Yes, it did happen. They had to explain to this jackass, no, man, it's a freaking, it's an astronomical term. It has nothing to do with racism.
But what do you mean black hole?
I'm not going to start explaining it to you. Black hole, as in a black hole in space that sucks in its gravity. It's so dense that it sucks matter into it. This guy thought it was a racial term. So it doesn't do any good, you know, when these kinds of things happen. It doesn't do any good when there is, for instance, that bonehead in New York, that turd, that city councilman whose name I won't mention, for that guy, every single solitary white person that walks, I understand he has his reasons, but I can tell you something, man, if it's going to start that every white person is the white devil, then there's no solution at all. So that kind of thinking has got to get, you know, that stuff's got to get swept away. As much as, you know, there may be a valid reason for a lot of that reactionary thinking. All right, so I went on this tangent rather than read this story here about the racial divide on Trayvon Martin, because I don't need to read the story. I don't need to read the story. I already know what it's about. I already know what I know why. The profound differences in the worldviews of blacks and whites. How many times am I going to hear that? The problem with white people is they think it's all black people's fault. And there's a white guy out there right now saying, yeah, the problem with black people, they think it's all the white guy's fault. Yeah, but you know what? Let's just forget about that and start talking about what's wrong. If you're white, I think it's better to start thinking about and talking about what the hell is wrong with you as opposed to this, what's been a ongoing, centuries-old discussion. What's wrong with blacks and why don't they get up off their ass and do what they got to do? What the hell's wrong with whites? That they needed the, the white man affirmative action, like the Caucasian leagues and like that. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. We got some more news to talk to you about, including where the hell, where are these Mega Million winners?
Yeah, people won their money. Nobody can find them.
These people who won the Mega Millions, man, they are, they've disappeared. The world famous Phil Henry Show will be right back. By the way, I'm wearing my Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie tonight, as I oftentimes I will. You can see the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie, and we go to camera 3 for those of you watching on Phil TV in HD. There it is. We want to put our meat in your mouth, which is the famous Ted slogan. And we were going to have Ted on tonight, right, Robert?
Yeah, he's still got to think that out, man. He's got a couple of suggestions he wants to change the slogan.
Change the slogan? We just had the shirt done.
Yeah, and then there's another guy who wanted to do a hoodie. We said no.
Who?
Jay Santos.
We're not doing another hoodie. I'm not going to be, no. This hoodie came out, as I've said many times, and I'll keep on saying it, this hoodie came out well in advance of any horrible news out of Florida. We're not going to start taking advantage of the situation. Oh, let's do a hoodie line. I got money that says there's some scumbag out there doing that, right?
Oh, man, there's probably more than one, and probably more than one radio station, too. I bet you the radio station hoodie.
I'd love to do a Google search on that, find out who's coming out with the hoodies all of a sudden. Oh, God. All right. Mega Millions winners lie low. Here's an interesting story, because Dan and I were just doing the arithmetic. Okay, so you got 600 million, right? How much is it here?
Yeah, about 666.
What?
What did you say?
About 666.
606.66.
I know. I mean, six right there.
656.
Oh.
How do you get 666? Anyway, 656 million. Now, let's cut that in half. Let's say 50% taxes. Let's just round it out, in fact, to a nice even 300 million. Let's say more than 50%. All right, we've rounded that out to a nice 300 million. Is that what I did? Yeah. Oh, no, there's three tickets. There's three tickets. So the three tickets represent roughly 200 million, let's call it.
What do you mean?
I mean, don't worry about it, bud. Let's say 230 million apiece, okay? Now, cut that in half. Half of that's taxes. That's 115 million is what you get. Now, let's say that this lady at McDonald's, because there's a lady who claims she holds a winning ticket, but she's being challenged by some co-workers who say that they also pitched in and bought tickets so that they, you know. So we were trying to figure out here, all right, so there's about $115 million that she would stand to get of her half of that one-third, because these three tickets are going to be sharing this $600 million. Let's say there's 10 people that she went in with. 10. That still means that's $11.5 million. Right? Yeah. $11.5 million per person. What is she? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, it's the difference between that and her getting 115.
But look, man. Number one, there's no way in hell. I suppose I'd have to be, you know, a pretty callous guy to say those people are all got together and decided they'll lie and try and see if they can't get money out of her. What the story is this. Miranda Wilson, who is a Baltimore woman, she claimed to have a winning ticket at a news conference. Her attorney, Edward Smith, said he hadn't seen the ticket, but they are asking reporters to leave them alone. Smith said Wilson will claim the prize, and he is preparing for possible challenges. What are they? Well, Wilson's co-workers at a McDonald's restaurant claim she bought tickets for a group pool and is trying to take all the money. What Ms. Wilson is saying is she did buy tickets for a group pool, but she also bought one for herself, and she is saying that that one that she bought for herself is the winning ticket.
Get out of here, man. You're going to expect people to believe that?
Well, I mean, you know.
Why would you believe it?
What do you mean, why would you believe it? If she said, oh, it just so happens one ticket here I bought for myself.
Yeah.
Come on, bud. I mean, isn't that asking a lot?
Well, I mean, what if she did?
If she did, then she should have come back to the office. She should have said to the people there, by the way, I bought a ticket, you know, for myself. If I'm a judge, I'm going to have to err in favor of I'm assuming in a court of law, she's going to say, well, yes, I did, Your Honor, buy tickets. Well, how do we know that's the one that you bought for yourself? Well, because that's what I did. I turned around and went back in. Oh, that's really nice. Nobody knows that, though. All we know is that you have, and you have testified to that, and these people, you have a group interest here in one of the tickets. And we're going to have to assume it's the winning ticket. But, Your Honor, you're screwing me. Yes, dear.
Man, I wouldn't believe that in a million years.
Well, it's a hard one to believe, you know.
Yeah, but what if she really did? What if she really did?
Hope it was. Good thing it wasn't you, man. No judge believe you.
What are you talking about?
If she really did, she's out. She's out of luck, man.
Why?
Because she should have taken steps to protect her interest in that ticket. I'm sorry. She's out of luck. If she really did, let's say she really did, just like you said, she really did. Oh, wow, I think I'll buy one for myself. She comes back to McDonald's. She doesn't say anything. I can't imagine anybody being that. I'm telling you, I know people exist that dumb. I just can't imagine. I don't know how they make it past the age of 6 months. But she went ahead and she bought the ticket for herself, whatever. There's no way on earth that anybody's going to believe it because she didn't do anything to ensure that people would believe it. For instance, she didn't say to her coworkers, by the way, I bought this ticket here. See this? Write the number down. This is the one I'm claiming for myself. Okay. What the hell? I'm not going to argue with her.
I would.
Why?
What if that's the winner?
How do you know?
What do you mean, how do I know? If that's the winner, I don't want her to have it.
How do you know it's the winner when she just comes back from McDonald's?
What do you mean?
What do you mean, what do I mean? If she comes back from McDonald's with the tickets that she bought for the group?
Yeah.
And for herself?
Yeah.
Okay. So she says, okay, this one here I bought for myself.
Yeah, that's the winner.
They don't know it's the winner, man. It's before they drew the ticket.
Well, wait, what ticket?
I'm going to start kicking some ass.
Just screwing around.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, in other words, she says, this is the ticket I bought for myself. Write down the number. That's it. Boom, 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 boom. And here's the one that is the group ticket.
Yeah, I know, but I can see somebody getting pissed off, man. As soon as they draw that winner and they find out that one ticket of one is the one that she kept for herself, they're going to say, somebody's going to say something.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Well, it's possible. If that's the case, then that's dirty pool, man. You know, if that's the case, she said, no, this is my ticket. You guys already said that it was cool that this was my ticket. The other ticket is your ticket. Boom, boom. You know, money, God almighty, money will just... But why not? Why shouldn't money drive us crazy? Why wouldn't money drive us crazy? Money buys the freedom to pursue the things that you love and the things that will enrich and fulfill you. You cannot deny that. You cannot deny that. It may be true that money is the root of all evil, but that doesn't mean that all money leads to evil.
I don't understand. Never mind.
You guys asked me to explain one more thing. Okay, Linda Bobo. Now, here's another lady, and that's a real name, Bobo, bud, just in case you want to start making an issue out of that.
Well, you can't blame me for asking.
Yes, I can. Another claim by a mother who said her son won the Maryland jackpot turned out to be false. Linda Bobo, age 64 of Mississippi, said her son, Michael Drone, a Glen Burnie, Maryland roofer, won the Mega Millions. Later, during a conference call with Bobo, Drone, and a TV reporter, Drone told her a friend had played a joke on him. What? A friend had played a joke on him and made him think he had the winning ticket. Who's Drone, anyway? Oh, that's the guy.
Drone told his mother that.
Lottery officials said it's not unusual that almost a week after the winning numbers were announced, no one has come forward. Each winner will get 218.6. There it is, 218 million. Now, they got to take the taxes out of that, don't they? I think they tell you, if it's like California, they'll say you can have one lump sum now, and they take a whole bunch of taxes out. I guess what would be the taxes on a one lump sum payment like that, or you can take it over a 20-year period. I wouldn't trust the 20-year period.
Why not?
I don't know. It would be like, how do I even know the government is, you know what I'm saying? It's weird, man. I wouldn't trust the government to be there for me, man. I'd think that what if they default, you know? What if they decide, well, there's not enough money in the fund. We're going to have to take, we're going to have to give you 10 cents on your dollar, you know? I wouldn't trust it. We've heard rumors, but no one has contacted our office, said a Kansas lottery official. It's a little overwhelming, more than likely. Excuse me. The winner is a regular person who now has $218 million to figure out what to do with. So what these guys are saying is many people who win these lotteries, these enormous amounts of money, the first thing they do is they find a lawyer and a financial advisor. They don't do diddly squat until they contact them, you know.
Well, yeah, but they're afraid. Aren't they afraid they won't get the money?
What are they afraid of? The money's not going to go away. It's going to be there. I think you have up to...
You got like up to a year to claim it.
Really?
Yeah, something like that.
You got a long time to claim it. It's not like, oh, you better get it tomorrow or it's going to be gone. No. Well, good luck to them, man. You know, and the rest of us, like my brother used to say, the rich get richer and the poor get plastic drapes.
What's that mean?
It was funny at the time. It's still funny. The rich get richer and the poor get poor. You don't know what that means.
I mean that they put plastic drapes up, Matt, instead of good ones.
Nobody even uses drapes anymore. So, all right, so that's kind of a drag, reading about all of that good fortune that people have. Can't we read about someone getting shot or something? I guess there isn't any. I'm kidding. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, has the souvenir shop open. I know that we can't all be mega millionaires, but we can at least walk around with our Bobby Dooley keychain. How about that? We can say, you know something? I got my Bobby Dooley keychain, and here it is. Head on over to the Phil Henry shop and pick up a Bobby Dooley keychain. Pick up a Phil Henry CD. Pick up a Phil Henry baseball cap. Pick up a Phil Henry. Pick up something that says Phil Henry on it, or our Phil Henry represent Phil Henry. That way you can say, I'm not a mega millionaire, and I could care less.
said Mega.
Mega. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know. It's something with a browser. I don't know what it is, man. I've had a difficult time here with a computer tonight. When I go over to Twitter, I go over to Facebook, and I try to open up something, it immediately slams shut on me. I don't know. It's a metaphor for my life. Anyway, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West may be dating. I didn't want you to vomit.
Man, you know, just put me on.
No, I'm not putting you on. I said maybe dating, and that's what I mean. Kim Kardashian and Kanye. Well, what? I don't know what's wrong with that.
I'm just talking, man. I just wish, you know, can't that lady stay single a little bit, man? Give somebody a shot?
She's obviously Kanye West is her kind of guy.
But, you know, obviously, last guy was a basketball player. Now, this guy, Kanye West, is a criminal.
What do you mean a criminal?
What do you mean a criminal? You mean a criminal?
Yeah.
Why do you call him that?
On account of his hip-hop.
Man, you're racist.
I know that.
Shut up.
You kidding around. Quit it.
Quit kidding around like that, bud. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West are a couple. People Magazine has confirmed. Like People Magazine. Yes, we went through People Magazine. They know. Hey, Kim, are you engaged to Kanye West? I don't know. Check with People, will you? Okay. Kim and Kanye have now just started dating. A source close to the situation, that's what it says, told the site. TMZ.com caught the tabloid twosome checking out a showing of The Hunger Games at a New York theater, then grabbing a meal at a swanky hotspot, Serafina. Then, yesterday morning, Kim emerged from Kanye's apartment building wearing the same clothes as the night before. Well! You know, I got a theory about why people don't like the Kardashians.
Here we go, Delabab being a racism.
Well, hold on, bud. Well, just hold on. Look, either, you know, I'm just telling you. I got a theory. People don't like that family. I know that there's a lot of people that do. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people are bothered by them. And my theory is the following. My theory is that while they don't appear to be particularly intelligent people, and yet they are wealthy beyond all reckoning, I don't think the intelligence thing stands a chance. I think anybody could stop, and maybe they're not very bright sounding. There's a lot of people that are smart but are dull as hell. Really boring.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very, very smart people when it comes to money. And, you know, they amass an enormous amount of money. But they're the least interesting people you ever want to be around. They got nothing to say. They're uninteresting. Of course, the worst kinds of people are people who've got a lot of money, who are boring as hell, who think they're really interesting, and everybody hangs around them not because they're interesting, but because they like to be around all that money and all the freebies, you know.
Yeah, they want to be on a guy's boat or something.
Or drink his free booze, or whatever it is that the guy's doing. And you put up with what a dull clown he is, or worse yet, the guy thinks he's really hysterical, and so he's Mr. like bad personality. But the thing with the Kardashians, I would ask myself, what the hell is it that people don't like about them? Now, I've seen the women online, especially on Twitter, that can't stand Kim Kardashian because they think she's into fur. And she's not. She is into fake fur, what they call faux fur.
What's that?
In other words, it's animal print, but it's fake. So you can't really dislike her if you thought about it. You can't really dislike her for that. And then there's a lot of women that just dislike the fact that she seems very plastic. She's an example of a shallow society that, you know, rewards pretty people. And the Kardashians are attractive. The girls are. I wouldn't say the rest of the family's necessarily, you know.
What about, what do you think about Bruce Jenner?
Oh, he's just smashing.
I don't mean that.
Bruce Jenner? Somebody ought to be honest with that guy about that facelift. That's just for starters. And then there is, you know, the mom. I don't know. But I think the thing about the Kardashians, and this goes to the heart of it with Kanye West, they are a family that is, I'm just going to say this, they're a family that is racially, you can't pin them down. Yes, I know that they're Armenian, but they're very dark-complected, and there is mixed-race marriages there with Khloe Kardashian and Lamar Odoms. Just one. And now, you know, you have Kanye and Kim. And I think the impression that a lot of maybe white and black America has is there's something kind of very undefinably bad about that, or something undefinably, it's not any kind of a paradigm or a family unit that anybody can identify with. Plus, they're really rich. And they wear fur. No, they don't. But, yeah, they do. And that kind of weird stuff. And that woman that got hit with the... Who was the one that got hit with the flower bomb?
The lady in this Kanye West.
Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Okay. She doesn't wear fur, man. I mean, I looked into this. She wears fake fur. And then you read Khloe as the other one. She says she talked the sister into that. So I don't know if they started out with real fur or not. But there is a the thing that I think pushes people away from them is this: they are the inheritors of a lot of money, even though yes, they've built their own businesses and they have their own perfume lines and their own fashion lines, and you can't fault them. They earn money that way. And Bruce Jenner is but then he married in, and people think that he married into the wealth. So there's something really about them that just seems easy street. Non-traditional Americano and
black.
And black, yes, thank you. Now then.
What are you talking about, man?
We're kidding around, Robert. Take it easy. But I will tell you, there is a there's a racial thing happening there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you're making everything racial now just on account of that Trayvon Martin story.
No, I'm not. I'm not making everything racial. Everything is racial in this country. You nuts? We spend more time running away from the truth in this country. Everything is racial. I'm making everything racial. I didn't make anything racial. This country was started out racial, and it's been that way ever since, man. And I'll tell you, if there's even one-tenth of 1% of race involved in some story, man, that's what it's going to be about. You mark my words. It's going to come out. I don't know how it's going to come out. Somehow, it's finally going to hit the fan. Somebody somewhere is going to, these Kardashians, what are they, Mexican?
Yeah, I thought that was Mexican until I heard the name. Don't sound Mexican to me.
Yeah, everybody knows it's Armenian on account of that's how it sounds.
How'd you know?
It sounds like that one guy that was governor.
Sounds like the one guy that was governor? You mean Duke Magian?
Yeah, that guy.
I don't know. All right.
But I knew we had an Armenian governor in California.
Yeah, we had a George Duke Magian. There's a lot of Armenian people from California. William Saroyan, do you know the name?
Uh-uh.
Well, why did I ask you guys if you know? He was a writer. He's a famous writer. Pulitzer Prize-winning writer. William Saroyan wrote the Human Comedy, I believe is the name of the book he wrote, among many. And he is an Armenian-American from Fresno, California. Let's see. Jack Kevorkian. I'm kidding.
He's from Michigan.
Right. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry, and, of course, in association with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. And don't forget, our website is philhendryshow.com, where you can enjoy all of our live streaming video, as well as our podcasts and everything else that we have to offer you each and every day, Monday through Sunday, baby. We never close shop over there at philhendryshow.com. Don't forget to set your clocks back. No, I'm kidding. Don't forget to join us for our new podcast, Phil Hendry Presents. When we're actually going to be airing that, or when that thing's actually going to go up on the site, we'll let you know, but it's very, very soon. See you guys tonight, Friday night.
Phil Hendry.